Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Ravel Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Hey, don't forget, this summer, July 20th, Energy Stadium, Real Madrid taking on Bayern Munich. And every week, we're giving out tickets to that incredible match. But when those legendary clubs come to town, you have the opportunity here at Energy Stadium to see it. So don't miss out. Get your tickets, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Ticketmaster.com. And our good friends at Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Now, that's the home of one of the great Liverpool supporters group here in Houston. That is the pub right in the thick of it at Marquee Entertainment Center, 7620 Katy Freeway. Go see my friend Peter. 18 TVs, great pub food, family friendly. And again, home of the Liverpool-Houston supporters group. That place was absolutely packed last weekend, and it will be for the Champions League. Great beer selection, whiskey offerings. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, 7630 Katy Freeway. With that, I bring on a good friend, color analyst, former professional soccer player. He is the color analyst for the Portland Timbers in town tomorrow night to take on the Houston Dynamo. He is Ross Smith, and he is straight off an airplane. Ross, how are you?
I'm doing well, Glenn. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy coming on to have a chat with you.
Yeah, you gotta love it. Yeah, we've all done interviews in pretty strange places, right? So we're getting you at the airport, which I'm sure you've done before.
Oh, but at the end of the day, nothing more that I want to do than to chat about soccer. I'm same with you. So wherever I go, that's all I want to do anyway. So it's perfect.
We're blessed. There's no question. All right. This is a unique situation. The Portland Timbers, this will be their 11th of 12 games on the road. How overall do you feel they have handled it? Because these are difficult circumstances while the stadium in Portland gets refurbished.
Yeah, I agree, Glenn. And I think to give an overall evaluation, I think it's been coming around where it was, I would have said 3 weeks ago, just about in dire straits. And if I'm honest, probably one of the more disjointed Timbers teams that I have called, that I've seen, that I've been on this side and watched and closely followed. But things have turned around quite a bit in the last 3 weeks. And it all comes after the San Jose match against a team that I think are raising a few eyebrows and grab everybody's attention for their philosophy under Matias Almeida. And quite honestly, they ran the Timbers off the ground that day at Avaya Stadium. And it's probably one of the lowest and poorest performances I've seen from a Timbers team. And the way they've reacted, though, has been impressive. And winning three out of their last four games, which started against Columbus Crew, against Caleb Porter's side. And so there was a lot of storylines, you know, going into that and to go up into Toronto and get the 3 points and then away at RSL. Those are three very, very difficult places to go into against good teams and to get wins. And so all of a sudden now, just the way they drag themselves out of the depths, out of all the criticism they were being faced with, things are looking completely different. And so it was a tough one against Vancouver. I did think they deserved more when you look at the chances through on goal and the two center backs for the Whitecaps, Godoy and Henry. They had standout nights. So the Timbers may be a little bit unlucky, but performances over the last four games certainly have left a lot more fans, a lot more in the front office, and a lot more players feeling good about what is happening right now as they build towards their big opening June 1st. And that's what it's all about. It feels like the season hasn't started. It's the biggest introduction to the main show that I've ever known. And right now, because of these last four games, there is excitement, even more excitement about June 1st with the team's performances of late.
Portland color analyst Ross Smith joining us. Ross, what has the approach been on the road? Because I think we're seeing less and less teams defending deep. But it is unique to play 11 straight games on the road with the Dynamo being that 11th game tomorrow. How are they approaching the road, and what's made them successful as of late?
Yeah, I like that you turn the attention towards the defensive side of it, because when I talk about that first block of games for the Timbers and when it wasn't going well, defensively they were all over the shop, and they couldn't sit hit deep. They would press at the wrong times. Whereas now, I think what you're seeing, and I think I got to throw in this name real quick, Dilip Suiloma. He's been a big uptick in performances and leadership in the way of his own individual standout performances in the team and really coming to the forefront of what the Timbers need along the back line, which is direction, which is communication. And since Liam Ridgewell since the club's parted ways, mutual consent, I think they've really struggled to find that leader and a person who's going to direct the team. And so defensively, it starts there. And that's where the Timbers, when things weren't going well, now they've started to round into form. Now they've got a structure and they've got a platform to build off of. And then you talk about the big time guys, which is a Blanco, a Valeri, and Thiago Chara. Those guys, particularly the Blanco, I have to look at that. That guy has almost grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck sometimes, and he's pulled the Timbers along. And so going forward, when you have a guy like that in your team who's performing well, then it all seems to look a better team and to look a team that others would fear. But it comes down defensively, and that's what I'm interested in tomorrow night, Glenn. What the Timbers will do against the Houston Dynamo team, who I call them Flyers, who have big Flyers in the team like Albert Elise and Mauro Minotas. What the Timbers do with their defensive line and how high they push with Bill Suiloma. Can he deal with the pace that Houston has to offer?
Last one before I let you go, Ross, and you did mention some of the star men there and Diego Valeri and Sebastian Blanco. Brian Fernandez comes from Necaxa. Now, this is a guy that, to me, is lethal in a lot of different ways. I think he causes problems for opponents because he can do it off combination play. He can do it individually off the dribble. He's excellent in a penalty area. He can do it in a lot of different ways. How much of this move is not only about the present, but at 24 years of age, the future with Brian Fernandez coming from Necaxa? Because this is a guy that you could see around for 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, and a guy, as you said, coming into his prime at that age, a guy who can play on any attacking positions and score in multiple ways, as you've said, Glenn. So there's a lot of excitement. And when I talk about building towards that June 1st big opening as the Timbers, they reopened Providence Park, which is phenomenal in itself. To go and put this kind of investment into a player, it shows that they don't want to lose ground. They want to be considered in terms of the top heavyweight punchers in this league. And I think they do that by making this MLS, by them making their club record signing $10 to $12 million, it's reported. And so it's a huge statement that we're not going to fall behind. We've upped our seeding and our ground, and we're bringing in a big marquee-type player. And, you know, with Diego Valeri and Chara Blanco on the wrong side of 30, you needed somebody like this coming up who could potentially be a big-time game-changer. And this guy's it. And so whether we see him featured tomorrow night, I know a lot of fans are, I can't wait to see what this guy looks like in person, his touches on the ball, his pace, and what he can bring to make this attack even more dynamic.
Ross, as always, thank you very much. You know, it's rare when we get opposing commentators actually in the stadium, but you will be there, so I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming on the program tonight and giving us your insight.
Yeah, it's always my pleasure, again. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
All right, that's the one and only Ross Smith, color analyst, former pro for the Portland Timbers. And as we go to break here, caller number 6 right now, you get a pair of tickets to the Dynamo Timbers. You will have to pick these up tomorrow during the day. So I'm telling you that right now because the game's tomorrow night. Also, quick one here. I want to remind you that we have been fortunate to have the food of Patagonia, the Argentine Steakhouse, here tonight. My good friend Sebastian Abraham, get out to that restaurant, Patagonia. Get out there. It's out on I-10. It is phenomenal food. You will not regret it. And again, a reminder here for our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. We thank them very much. DaspitLaw.com. They are bilingual. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm have gotten soccer on the air here in Houston. So a big thank you to them. Get out to King's Court tomorrow, pregame. Join El Batallon. We will take a break. More to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
Now Daly with some room to work with. Daly with the right. And Daly has the equalizer in the 42nd minute. What a goal by Rachel Daly. And the Houston Dash are now on the board. Daly shot, and Daly scores. Daly's second of the afternoon, and she now has a brace.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here. A quick reminder here for Tri-Eagle Energy. They're bringing the energy on Houston Dynamo game days. They're giving Houstonians the power to win free electricity for a year. You want to learn more? Text POWER to 77177. Sign up for Power to Win electricity plan for a year. Each time the Dynamo win a home game, Tri-Eagle Energy will draw a lucky fan or customer to win a free year of electricity. The Dynamo have been winning a lot at home this year, so you have a good opportunity. Enter to win by texting POWER, P-O-W-E-R, to 77177. Visit TriEagleEnergy.com to learn more. P-U-C-T, hashtag 164. We're switching gears right now to the Houston Dash, atop of the NWSL, coming off an important win out in Utah. And in that game, scoring late in the first half and then the beginning of the second half, the very talented Rachel Daly of the Houston Dash, she joins us now. Rachel, thank you very much for coming on the program.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's just talk about what's different this year, because this was a great win on the road this year against the very good Utah.
Yeah, I mean, Utah have done really well, and I think James said it himself in his post-match interview. You know, they haven't conceded a goal yet, so that was vital for us to get that goal. So for me, obviously, as a forward, great for me to score, but I think just super important to get the goals on the road, because I think, you know, this time last year, that wouldn't have been the case. Going 1-0 down, we would usually just find that very difficult to come back from. But I just think the character of the team is much better this year. You know, we lost a few of the national team players already. But I just think we're all in it together this year, whereas in previous years, I feel like we've maybe been off on our own script. And I think James has done fantastic. James and Eddie and all the staff have done fantastic in getting us on the same page, which I think, again, has been the weak missing link, I'd say, from the last previous years I've been in.
How competitive have the training sessions been? Because that's one thing I keep hearing.
Yeah, massive. You know, I think we train a lot more than what probably everybody's used to. And everything's a competition. You know, we played cricket today. That was a competition. You know, it's fun, it's lighthearted, but we know when to get down to work. And, you know, I think that even how dense the sessions can be, you know, we all take everything on board, and the work rate is phenomenal from everyone.
She's Rachel Daly, now has 3 goals on the year. She's been in a beautiful goal against the North Carolina Courage at home as well. So she's had 3 goals of real quality here. Interesting for you, though. You go to the World Cup with England. With Phil Neville, the manager there, the former Manchester United player, you do play a different role, don't you?
Yeah. You know, I think he, I say this all the time in interviews. He, you know, I sat down with him when I first met with him last year when he first became the manager. And I said, look, I'm sick of being a player who just gets moved around. You know, I don't want to be a jack of all trades. I want to have a solid place where I can just focus on. And he just looked at me and said, that's nonsense. you know, he said he would use my versatility rather than use it against me. I think it's been abused a lot in the past. But, you know, he's not set on playing me in one position. You know, I think it could change depending on how the World Cup goes and, you know, what is required for what game. But, yeah, I think I'm more than likely moved more to a right-back position, which is very different to me. But, you know, I train hard day in, day out with the Dash, and, you know, I do extra on my own in order to prepare for both positions, or 3 positions for that matter. So I think I'm pretty prepared in both.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because being versatile can also extend one's career. But on the other hand, it can kind of wreak a little havoc on you mentally, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's tough. You know, I think the first game back with the Dash this year, you know, our home opener, I felt like against the rain, I struggled a little bit because I think I'd worked so hard in the off season on, you know, I'd been doing forward specific stuff. But then when, you know, you're not training with a team week in, week out, other than the national team where I was playing right back for the most part. So I think I came in a little bit rusty in front of goal, and I think it showed a little bit. But then obviously I had to switch my mindset back to being a forward again and started to play a little bit better. But yeah, it's very taxing. I think it is definitely a mindset switch. Physically, I think I can do both roles very well. I think I'd agree with you on the fact that it's a mindset switch.
Houston Dash is Rachel Daly, also a member of the England women's national team that will be in the World Cup in Group D. They will take on Scotland, Argentina, and Japan. Before I ask you about playing Scotland and what that could mean, tell me a little bit about this England squad under Phil Neville and what some of your strengths are and how you feel heading into this, what many people are saying is going to be the most competitive World Cup ever for women.
Yeah, I mean, Phil's great. I always say this, but he's such a great communicator. And I think that's been like the biggest key for me personally. And I think, you know, the team benefit from that a lot. He tells you where you stand. He's honest. He preaches honesty, and, you know, he puts it on us all the time to be honest. Be honest with me. You know, I'll be honest with you. And I think that's the biggest thing. And again, just like James, they're very similar in the way they approach things. They've both got us on the same pages. And, you know, I think that's important. He balances life off the field and on the field very well. And I think that's something that we find very difficult in a national team setting, which I think he's got down to a fine art. But he's brilliant. I can't say a bad word about him. And I think he's got the squad to where we are now. And he's led us to get to the World Cup. And I only see success for the World Cup for us.
Was there some skepticism about Phil Neville when he first took the job? You know, how much does he know about the women's game? How serious is he? I mean, was that fair to kind of judge him like that in the beginning?
I think there were people judging him, but I think that's natural, you know, in any role. You know, I think you would get judged if you moved over to a different company. You know, I think it's very natural. However, you know, I had none of those judgments because at the end of the day, we preach all the time, we don't want the women's game. We don't want to be labelled the women's game.
Right.
You know, football's football. And why should he come in and have to know the women's game inside and out when he doesn't need to? He treats us as footballers. He doesn't treat us as women. He doesn't treat us as men. He treats us as footballers. And I think that's been the most different thing for me is that, you know, we're not categorised as women. We're not categorised as men's and women's football. It's football. And you get treated the same no matter what. And I think that's one thing he's brought in. And, you know, there has been judgment on everybody's part. But I think he's shook that off very well and shown how good he is at his role and what he does. And, you know, whether he is in the men's game or the women's game, I think he's so knowledgeable about the game and about people that he wants to be successful.
Rachel, are you blowing the theory out of the water that it's so different to coach female soccer players than it is male? Is it just football?
No, I don't think that it should be categorized in any way. You know, we step over that white line and we are all footballers. You know, I think the way maybe people are treated might be differently. You know, how women handle things versus how men handle things are very different. Mm-hmm. However, when you're talking specifically about football, I don't think that we should be treated any differently. You know, I don't think people may argue against that. People, even on my team, maybe think that's wrong. But for me personally, I think we all want to be, you know, equal pay, equal play and all that. But then you can't be expected to be treated differently in other aspects. I think that we're all footballers and we should all be treated like footballers as soon as we cross that white line. Different story off the field, completely different. I think we need to be treated differently to male footballers off the field. But as soon as you cross that white line, I think it's anybody's game.
Mm, love this. England, Scotland, Kim Little in Scotland. There will be a lot of pride in this one and there will be a lot of emotion in this one, I would imagine.
Absolutely, you know, the British rivalry, you know, but I think, you know, they've come a long way over the past few years. They've got some fantastic players and they've been very successful. So, you know, I think it'll be a bit of a bloodbath game because it always will be with British mm-hmm. teams. But, no, super excited. I think it's how better to start a World Cup off by playing against your local rivals.
For you, you know, getting this close to it now, how are you feeling? You keeping everything kind of in check because this is a historic moment. This is an amazing moment for you and your playing career, representing your country and the pride of representing a country. So I want to take you specifically to that. What does it mean to you when you're standing there when the national anthem's being played?
I think I go numb. I don't think I have any words to describe that feeling. You know, it's ultimate pride. That's what I live and breathe this game. And you know, if I didn't want to be there, I wouldn't do what I do every day. And ultimately, what I do day in, day out with the Houston Dash and on my own is all geared towards how I can help myself as a footballer and how can I be the best version of myself on and off the field. And I think that that's obviously what's got me to the national team. And that's been my focus over the last 5, 6, 7 years. And wearing that badge, you know, and just singing that national anthem, there's nothing in my mind that is bigger than that in football for me. So, you know, I can't even put it into words how it makes me feel. And obviously getting the call up, it was just mind-blowing to me. But yeah, I'd say what I do for England is what I do for the Dash. And, you know, it's for me, it's obviously the national team is the biggest pride in the world, but I think I play the same game no matter what, no matter where I am. I think I saw a tweet the other day, you know, about how I don't sort of let up because I should be focusing on the World Cup. There's none of that from my end. I think that how I approach a Dash game is how I approach an England game. And, you know, I think that's the way it is for me. But, yeah, going back to that, I don't think there's anything, any more pride I can put into that moment.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll just tag it with, are you carrying the people of England on the field? I mean, do you feel an obligation to represent your country and play your heart out for the people that are supporting you, the people of your country?
Yeah, absolutely. I just actually got goosebumps as you said that. You know, it's a massive honour. You know, I'm not in England now. I'm not playing in England now. So for me, that's difficult. I can't connect with the fans that I would usually like to, and you know, that, things like that I can do if I was playing in England. But when I put that shirt on, you know, there's nothing but a focus for me on how can I impact people's lives in England? How can I, you know, show them how good we can be? And everything we do, we just play for that country. And you know, as soon as we cross that white line with England, it's how can we impact everyone? And how can we impact the next generation? How can we make everybody at home proud? And I think that's, you know, from everybody's perspective, including, you know, staff down.
Absolutely love the passion that you have. Love the fact that you're playing for your homeland and your country, and that nationalistic pride is really something special. Rachel, best of luck over at the World Cup in France, playing for England. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We feel privileged to get this interview before you take off.
Thank you for having me. Have a good one.
All right, that's Rachel Daly. Man, I can't wait to watch her in the World Cup. Unfortunately, I didn't get any of the England games. But I do have some of the other Dash players with Canada and New Zealand and Australia. So I'm excited about that on some of the game calls. I'm doing the games with Angela Huclis. But more importantly, Rachel Daly in England, one of the teams that people are really looking at. Take a break here. My friends at Advantage BMW. I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased. I've owned. I have a 5 Series. Absolutely love it. The other thing I love about Advantage BMW Midtown is the customer service. Second to none. And they will take you through sales, service, and finance. It can be done so easy. Get down to Advantage BMW Midtown. That is the soccer place. That is the place that supports the game of soccer with their sponsorship of this show. Advantage BMW Midtown. Go down there, say hello to Philip and Justin. And the rumor is those guys are going to be out at the DC United game this weekend. Let's take a break. More to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Here for Larson. Back out top for Guerrero. He'll chip in onto the back post. Delaney in front! And it's 1-0! Christian Pulisic gives Dortmund the lead in what could be his final home appearance.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here again. A reminder, the Houston Dynamo in action tomorrow night. They'll take on the Portland Timbers. You can catch that game on the Cube. But I would say more importantly, get out there in person. A great night to see Diego Valerian Company and the Dynamo back at home. HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Right now, we've got a special guest tonight on this program. Secretary General of U.S. Soccer in 94 when the World Cup was here He is a National Soccer Hall of Famer. We could go on and on. We would never get an interview done if we kept talking about the things this man has accomplished. He is Hank Steinbrecher, and he joins us now. Hank, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Glenn, great to talk to you. You know, we're alum of the same school, and it's always great to touch base with you.
Yeah, and we got to give a shout-out to Davis and Elkins College in West Virginia. Hank was a member of two national championship-winning teams there as well, small school, but with a tremendous soccer history in West Virginia. All right, Hank, let's. I mean, the first thing I want my listeners to do is kind of get a sense of 94 and what your job was with U.S. soccer at that time as a secretary general and with the World Cup, and a very infamous World Cup here in the U.S.
World Cup organizing is a difficult task to begin with. But here's the structure. You start out with a rights holder for the World Cup, and that rights holder is FIFA. FIFA awards to a national governing body, in this case, the United States Soccer Federation, the rights to host a World Cup. They, in turn, set up a separate entity to protect any assets that the not-for-profit organization or the federation, not-for-profit federation, would have as a local organizing committee. So the two, local organizing committee and the federation, the hosting federation, work extremely closely together. They're tied at the hip to execute a World Cup. My primary role was the federation, to develop the federation and our national teams and soccer in general to be able to host the 1994 World Cup.
Hank Steinbrecher joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. So take me a little bit deeper into that. And, you know, how did we decide back in 94 what cities would be host cities for World Cup games? I know it was the political process, right?
It's an arduous political process. And let me give you a little bit more background information on what my history has been. Mm-hmm. I served, obviously, the 94 World Cup in the senior executive position. Also brought the Women's World Cup here, did all the political analysis and the bidding for the Women's World Cup as a hosting federation, and was very much involved with the Atlanta Olympics as well. But I started out as a venue director in the 84 Olympic Games, working for Peter Ueberroth and Alan Rothenberg. After I left U.S. Soccer, I was retained by FIFA to be the general coordinator for two of their World Cups, Youth World Cups, the U-17, which was held in Trinidad, ironically enough, on 9/11, and the Under-20 in Brazil. And I was also asked to serve FIFA as one of the five-man international delegation to go through each host city in Korea and Japan to analyze their bid to see which country and make a recommendation as to which country would be best capable of hosting a World Cup. After that, I negotiated with Morocco to represent them in the formation of their bid documentation. Along with Alan Rothenberg, we served as their key consultants, a vote of which we lost 14-11.
Let me add to that background. Before this is what makes Hank even more interesting. Hank was a college soccer coach as well. Began his coaching career at Warren Wilson College, Appalachian State, and then on to Boston University. Then you get into sports marketing with Quaker Oats. So at a time where it was not the easiest to make a living in soccer, you found a way to do a number of different things, obviously because of your talents and your intellect. So I want to take all that World Cup stuff and all that history that you have and knowledge and the process, and I want you to dumb it down for my audience and tell me, what is it going to take for us in Houston to get the World Cup here? Because I think a lot of people are concerned and confused with the criteria. We're not hearing a lot out of Houston here right now, and there's a lot of people who want this World Cup here, myself included.
The reality, Glenn, is you're not hearing much from FIFA. So consequently, you're not going to hear much from an organized local organizing committee, which is the United Committee, the United Bid Committee. And you're not hearing very much from the cities that are bidding. Everything's kind of on hold because of Qatar. And my guess is, having been in the inner halls of FIFA for a while, is that Qatar represents a significant amount of difficulties for FIFA. So their attention is on that cup with a high level of confidence that the 2026 cup in the United States will be executed in a, in an extremely professional manner. I mean, we've done it before. We have the, all the human capital necessary. We've trained a cadre of extremely good sports executives. So right now is a lull period, but that doesn't mean you should not be working. If I'm analyzing your bid and I'm analyzing Houston, I'm sitting back as more than just a casual observer. You know, you've got a lot of things in place that are right and that are good. John Arnold is your chairman. Kennedy is the key man. I think you've got pieces in place and a great ownership of the Dynamo. Now, you're sitting probably, what, fourth on the table with the Dynamo now. The attendance is not one of the best in the league. But FIFA's not going to take that into consideration. And the inspection teams are not going to take that in consideration because those figures change from year to year and from generation to generation. 2026 is a long way away. You guys may catch lightning in a bottle with the team and be bringing in, you know, 30, 40,000 a match. So I think you have a lot of going for you, but my instincts tell me you'll probably go with 10 cities. Mm-hmm. The more cities you go with, the greater your exponential cost because you're repeating staff and expenses in every city that you're going to. So I think what you'll look at is ultimately coming down to about 10 cities. You've got 17 now. So where do you guys fit within that group? And I know that within other communities, they're still debating whether or not they should have a public vote to support this. So it's a wide open battle right now. And you need to be doing some things that will get you ready for when the crunch comes.
What would some of those things be?
You know, if I were doing it again, and if I were looking at it, listen, your bid documentation has to be excellent. But your bid documentation will not win you the rights to host a World Cup. Mm-hmm. They will only eliminate you if your bid documentations are not good. It is ultimately a whole set of criteria. And it's a political process. And I believe that this World Cup 2026 is going to be thinking about leaving a legacy for North American soccer. The title is the United Bid. What are you doing within your community to spur the development of the game? The goal of U.S. soccer is to be the preeminent sport. Not a preeminent sport in the United States, to be the preeminent sport. What are you doing in a concrete way to help accomplish that? What is the legacy you're leaving for the youth after the World Cup goes? And there's a simple theory on bidding, and that's you win by bidding. You don't win the bid. You win by bidding. You get an infrastructure in place. You focus in on a legacy. You become strategically involved as to what that legacy ought to be for your community. There's a great deal of work that needs to be done. And you have some tough competition, but I think you have some competition that'll also go by the wayside pretty quickly.
Hank Steinbrecher joining us. This is fascinating here. How much of the passionate side of soccer has to be sold to FIFA? In other words, yeah, you can check off a lot of the criteria, infrastructure, stadiums, local transport, things like that. But is there any part of it that, from a passionate soccer standpoint, does that have to be a part of this bid? Does that have to sell?
I'll be very clear with you.
Yes.
I served on this five-man committee, the FIFA Inspection Committee of Korea, Japan.
Yes.
Sepp Blatter, who was the president at the time, was very vocal that he wanted the World Cup to go to Japan. our team spent a month in Japan and a month in Korea. And we came away from that saying, people may die if they don't get this. I mean, there's so much at stake that we felt that it should go to both countries. Mm. That the passion of the Korean people was absolutely incredible for the game. And that's how they got in and got to host the World Cup as well. It was based primarily on their passion. Listen, most things are going to be equal. Your stadium, Energy Stadium, is as good as any stadium in the United States. But they're all that way.
Yeah.
Your infrastructure, second or third largest city in the country, mm-hmm. Your infrastructure is there already. Your highway system is there already. All the hotel rooms are there already. But so is the case in New York, in Los Angeles, in Denver, in Washington, D.C. All of that's the same. So how do you separate yourself from the pile? You do so by your passion for the game.
Yeah, that's
you do so by separating yourself from the rest by the legacy you intend to leave for the youth in your market. How do you unite people? And in the world we're living in today, we need unitedness. We need to be united.
Yeah,
we
no
need
question.
Something to bring us together.
No
what
question.
Concrete plans does Houston have for that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're kind of waiting to find out what comes out of the bid community. But I guess there's something that all of us can do in the community, and that's just keep supporting the game and keep doing everything that we do to promote the sport here. Will that be noticed?
That will be noticed, but don't you think they're doing that in Seattle?
I do.
And don't you think they're doing that in Kansas City and in New York and in Miami and in Boston and in San Francisco and Philadelphia and Atlanta? They're all doing that. What makes you different? What makes you stand out?
So that passion,
a matter of marketing.
So that passion through marketing and a plan, but that also has to come from the leaders of the bid committee, in this case, Chris Kennedy and Mr. Arnold, right?
Yes, or the political infrastructure mm-hmm. of the city.
Yeah, and that
of
would,
the mayor.
The mayor,
of
the mayor's office and local
Well, the governor
council,
has another
governor.
Venue to worry about as well.
All right, so would you say that because of Dallas, you know, could Dallas and Houston both be host cities for a World Cup in 2026, you think?
Yes.
And we have Monterrey, Mexico, which we would have to think is going to get it as well. Could that be a positive?
Monterrey is going to get it.
Yeah, so could that be a positive, those three being close to each other geographically?
It could be a positive from a logistical point of view of putting a group of teams together.
Yeah.
It may, in fact, cut down costs. It may cut travel expense. It may cut difficulties with players going back and forth. So it may be an advantage.
Hank Steinbrecher joining us. I mean, this is some fascinating stuff about World Cup, World Cup bids, what cities will get it. As we all know here in Houston, Texas, what it could do for the game here, just unbelievable outside of the revenue and dollars generated. If you were going to just say, here are three things, maybe hone in on them a little bit more and go into a little bit more detail possibly. Three things that we need to be doing right now in this moment, no matter what FIFA is doing, as a soccer city right now when it comes to this 2026 bid?
Well, there are a couple of categories. One is your documentation according to the bid requirements has to be exceptionally good. As I said, it's not going to win you a World Cup, but it will lose you a World Cup. If it is not exceptionally well done, and if not a lot of energy put into it, then it can eliminate you. I've seen it happen before. It can eliminate you from consideration. So that aspect of this has to be perfect. Next is you need to have that community support and vocal community support coming from the head of your organizing committee and from your political apparatus within the city. And third, in overreaching all of that, it's a matter of marketing. We want it, and we're going to get it, and here's what we have to do that.
Hank, this is exceptional stuff, and I really think you've painted a great picture, certainly for me and my listeners here, when it comes to this. What a remarkable thing it could be.
Let me tell you how important it is for a community. I mean, never mind the economic impact it has for a community, the hotel rooms, the restaurants, and all of that. It's a matter of pride. The World Cup is a window through which the world perceives your city. And it goes well beyond the borders of the United States. It goes around the globe. And how well prepared you are, how clean your window is the perception that people will have of your city around the world. And it is very worthwhile putting in the effort, putting in the time, putting in the due diligence to win that bid to get to host the World Cup.
Boy, this is an opportunity that is certainly not going to come around again in my lifetime, I don't think.
No, it will not.
Yeah, so there is so much at stake here.
And listen, I've sat in on the bid presentations from 27 American cities wanting to host the World Cup in 1994. I know the energy with which they came in with. You always have to obey the structure of a bid documentation. You have to always adhere to the requirements. But I'll tell you what, when the mayor of Chicago comes in to a room and says, this is what we're going to do to get the World Cup, and we want the opening game, you better believe it's a very powerful message.
Yeah, so... we're getting a picture here of what needs to occur here in Houston, Texas. Now Chicago pulled out of the bid. Now, that had something to do with, I guess, uncertainty for taxpayers and FIFA and their unwillingness to negotiate. Yeah, what happened there?
Let me put this in kind of a historical context.
Mm-hmm.
The pendulum in rights holders swings back and forth. Before 1994, 1990 World Cup, the local organizing committee had almost complete jurisdiction over the management and the finances of the World Cup. It was Italy. The United States hosted in 94, and we made a significant profit. And FIFA looked at this as the rights holder and said, we should make that profit. And FIFA began bringing back more and more of the operations and the marketing of the World Cup under their umbrella and away from the local organizing committee. That pendulum has really swung to the rights holders. And now, I mean, I've read the bid documentation for FIFA and the requirements. They're extremely onerous to the point of, well, you have to give up control of your airport. Now, it doesn't say that specifically, but that's the general gist of. They want everything. So when you do your negotiations for this, you have to understand that it's also a negotiation. And it's a negotiation with the local organizing committee and with FIFA. It's an ongoing process.
Well, Hank, listen, thank you so much for coming on tonight. This is an incredible education. I'm going to go back and listen to this again. But I really think my listeners and those that listen to this in Houston and around the country, you're going to get a better sense of what it's going to take, because I think it was very nebulous before, and I think you've cut through that for us, and for that, I thank you.
Big stakes, Glenn.
Yeah, and for that, I thank you, and I love the city a lot, as do so many people. We've hosted Super Bowls. We've hosted other, you know, huge NCAA events.
All of it, you have it all already.
Yeah.
It's all there. It's all there.
We would.
How do you separate yourself from everybody else is the question.
Hank Steinbrecher, you're the man. I'm going to get you back on again soon, because we got to talk some other things soccer-wise outside of the World Cup. Can we do that down the road?
Any time for you, I'll do anything.
You know what? This is an exclusive, by the way.
Hank, you are my friend.
Well, you're also a great, great, great mentor to so many of us at Davis and Elkins College in West Virginia, and you've influenced more than you may know. So we just want to make sure you know that. And thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime I can help, Glenn, happy to do so, buddy. Good luck to you.
Thank you, sir. Our thanks to Hank Steinbrecher and, of course, you, the listener here tonight tuning in. Don't forget Cube 57 tomorrow, your official home for the Houston Dynamo. Join Eddie Robinson, myself, Cindy Bourbano, and make sure you tune in tomorrow to the pregame show. 7 o'clock, that starts. Dynamo taking on the Portland Timbers. And also, don't forget, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, July 20th, Energy Stadium. Houston soccer fans, it does not get better than this. Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. That does it tonight for Andrew Carlson, producer. For Victor Ariza, I'm Glenn Davis. Don't forget the podcast at podcastarena.com and on iTunes. And remember, soccer matters.